Welcome to the Sunday night There's a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. We have two speakers today who are both compulsive overeaters, members who have at least 6 months of abstinence, have recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and who maintain recovery on a daily basis. After the two shares, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speakers have shared. So first, welcome Jessica C., a compulsive overeater from Ontario.
Thanks, Catherine, and thanks everyone who's doing service tonight. So I am Jessica C., a recovered compulsive eater. For those in Canada, I live in Barrie, Ontario. I always like if I know that someone's local to me, or if I can sort of picture where they are, they feel more real to me. So that's why I like to mention that if when I can. So yeah, I hadn't expected to speak tonight. So I guess one thing I wanted to say is I'm really grateful that there's one newcomer here. Welcome, and really happy that there's some returning folks as well. You guys are the most important people in this meeting tonight. You know, when I think about the Big Book of AA, which is the text that I use to recover. It's all over the Big Book that we have to sponsor. We have to work with others, intensely with others. We have to be really welcoming to the newcomer and the returning member. You know, there's practical reasons for that. We need new people. We need new people in this recovery. But like, for me, as someone who stays recovered, my program comes alive when I sponsor someone else. So yeah, I'm just really grateful that everyone is here, but especially the newcomer and returning member. So I'll try to go through my history really quickly. So I first came to OA a long time ago, 2 decades ago. Took me a long time to, you know, cobble together any sort of abstinence. And even when I was sort of abstinent, I was still getting ease and comfort from the food. You know, I'd gotten rid of like the obvious things like the cookies, the cakes, and all of that stuff. But, you know, I was still getting ease and comfort from sugary cereals and, you know, volume and that sort of thing. And that didn't really last for very long. You know, I went back to the hard stuff eventually. And yeah, my binges, you know, I was in OA, this was like 10 years ago, but my binges were getting worse. Like they were getting worse. I thought I was working the program harder. But I hadn't really surrendered, you know, I hadn't surrendered all of my alcoholic ingredients. And I never really worked all of the 12 steps. You know, I sort of picked and chose the things that I liked, left out the things I didn't like, primarily sponsoring. I wanted it to be about me and people helping me. I didn't want to help others. So yeah, kind of a big like pivot point in my story was when I had a family doctor suggest that I try a medication for binge eating disorder, which is essentially an amphetamine. And I knew this was a bad idea, being an addict. But I said yes, and it was a bad idea. You know, I now had, you know, my food addiction, which never really abated when I took this amphetamine. And then I really started to abuse this amphetamine, and like things really escalated. And, you know, 2.5 years after I was taking that amphetamine, I really hit a bottom, because here I am hiding an addiction to a drug and still having enormous food binges. So, I really, I at that point I was like, I'm gonna die. Like, it's not gonna take that long if I keep doing this. So I threw myself back into the program, and that was 4.5 years ago. And I did everything, that I did all of the things. I finally did all of the things. I worked all of the 12 steps quickly. I got really honest about anything I was doing with food that was, I was still having playtime with food, and I had to stop having playtime with food, any sort of of event with food. I had to stop that. And I also had to start weighing, measuring my food. For me, like, I just can't make, I needed someone else to make those decisions for me, the volume that I ate. And yeah, it was hard work, but I got, during that step process, which all it took about 2 months, I would say, I was no longer obsessed with food, and I'd never not been obsessed with food on some level. So I finally experienced that miracle of neutrality with food, and which, I always thought was just too good to be true. Like, I would hear people share that they had that, and I just thought, there's no way. Like, I'm always going to be somehow in some level, obsessed with food. And I just don't have that today. I think it's worth mentioning that I have had physical recovery as well. I've lost about 50 pounds. So I'm in, like, a size that I've never been in my adult life. These past 4 years, I always carried extra weight around. And yeah, so that was back in, like, the early part of 2021 that all happened. And I continue to work this program with vigor. I do. And the most important part of it is continuing to develop a relationship with a higher power, because I know that it wasn't me that took away the food obsession. Like, it was like surgically removed from me, that food obsession. And, like, that's not me managing better. That is something else beyond me that took it away. So it's like, it wasn't what I thought a spiritual experience was going to be like. I really thought the heavens were going to open up. I would be levitating, but what it was the removal of that food obsession. And yeah, it's truly a miracle. And, I really, like, someone today, I was at a wedding shower today, and someone said to me, "What do you do in your free time?" And I didn't say I'm in a 12-step program. It takes up a lot of my free time, but it does. That's what I do. I have to do it. I have a very grave spiritual disease. There's, you know, it I it occurred to me recently. I did a talk, I guess, on a phone meeting, and it was really a lovely experience. And I guess what I learned from that, though, is the gravity of my disease, is the gravity of my disease and how deep it goes, and how much I need to pick up these spiritual tools. Because if I don't, if I do not, if I am not, like, if I do not have a dedicated prayer and meditation time, if I'm not sponsoring, if I'm not doing inventory work constantly around my character defects, it's like this film forms over my eyes and my perception, and everything I see and experience in the world is distorted by my disease. And it is like having, like a chronic physical illness, like diabetes, I have a friend whose son has type 1 diabetes, and they're constantly, like, thinking about how they're going to manage that for him. And I have to do that for myself. And Thank you, God, that the solution is often helping others. Like, I mean, what a blessing that the solution for my disease is connecting with God and helping others. So yeah, I wanted to share too, something I think is sort of evidence of spiritual growth for me was 2 weeks ago, I found out that my team that I'm on at work is being dismantled, and half of the team was fired, essentially. And I have not been let go, but the way that these things go in large companies is they do it in stages, and I could be like, on a later stage. And I really like my job. I did not want it that what the work that I do to come to an end. And I had just changed to this job a year ago after staying in the la thing I did before I was in forever. And my pattern is to stay in a bad situation. Not that it was bad, but I don't like to change, I guess. And it's a lot of effort to like make a resume, interview. It's like it, for me, it can be kind of a hellish experience, and I find myself in it again, possibly. But I'm not afraid. I'm not worried. I'm not looking forward to it, but I would just be in dire straits in the past, in the situation, and getting all these harebrained ideas about what I should do next. Like, oh, I'll quit, and I'll like go off and like go to school, do something totally different, like just not practical at all for someone, at my stage of my life. And I'm not doing that either. I'm like, okay, I guess the next step is to go to God. It does next For me, the next step wasn't like, okay, find out who's gonna give me another position, like hustle, hustle, hustle. It was like the next step was a lot of prayer, a lot of like, saying to God, what do you think I should do? And I used to hear people say those things in meetings and go, come on, like, come on, like, you don't really mean that. Like, and now I actually, when I do that now, when I do take these big decisions to prayer and meditation, I do get answers. I really do. But for me, like, God talks to me in short declarative sentences. It's like, yeah, you got to start looking for something else. Like, that was sort of the message I got from God. Like, yeah, you should probably, like, you should. But, and so those are my marching orders, is to start looking for something else. And then I'm going to get a little, like, God's going to give me a little more guidance. He's going to say, yeah, that position looks interesting. Why don't you set up a meeting about that one? I would prefer to like have the whole like end-to-end journey mapped out for me, and that is not how God talks to me, because then I wouldn't have to keep going to God if he gave me the whole, everything at once. I'd just be like, okay, thanks. I'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks, once I try all of this. No, I actually have to keep conversing, keep checking in with God. Someone said to me, another fellow said, wow, what do you think God has in store for you? Like, they were excited. And I was like, oh my gosh, I could be excited about this. I hadn't thought about that. Like, I don't have to be terrified or worried. Like, that's such a miracle. If you had known me in the past, like, it just would have been like, I would have been such a hot mess. And I knew this. I went on a trip to Nova Scotia, which was really nice. And I knew that this was happening, and I did not obsess about it. I wasn't calling everyone. I wasn't like making it like the number one thing. I was talking to everybody. Like, I was still able to focus on others and enjoy myself, and that again is a miracle, because like I can still be selfish and self-centered, but boy, was I ever like that before. And I am so grateful too that the solution to my disease is to not be selfish and self-centered, to be humble, to focus on others, to be interested in them, to not make it all about me and my problems. Because this disease of compulsive eating just baffled me. So it's like it was all I could think about or talk, you know, all I could think about or talk about was me, because I was always trying to figure out me and my problems. And now I actually have a lot of trust that God is helping me. So I don't have to make it every problem that I have your problem too, you know? So yeah, gosh, what else did I want to say? I think I'm gonna probably wrap it up there, but I hope I've been able to say something that's helpful to others. And I guess I just want to come back to, you know, this message that if you are a real deal compulsive eater, you know, like there is so much hope and so many miracle stories happening in this program today. I see people recovering quickly, getting peace in their lives quickly, and I hope that you stick around for that. So with that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Jessica. Next up is me, Catherine A., recovered compulsive overeater. I'm just going to set up my timer here. So, yeah, hi, I'm Catherine A., recovered compulsive overeater. I am also in Ontario and located in Kitchener, for those of you who are local. I've been in OA since the end of February 2022, so coming up on 3.5 years now. Been abstinent for just over 3 years, and yeah, it's been really amazing to become part of this program when and to see essentially the miracles that happened. I struggle to use that word. It gets thrown around a lot, but I don't really have another word to describe the sorts of transformations that I've seen within myself and within other people in the rooms. I want to talk today. I'll tell a little bit about my history, but I thought I would also just share a few of the things that I've been talking to newcomers about recently. I've had a few really good calls with people who are newer to the rooms, and some of the questions they have asked have led to some really interesting conversations. So I thought I would talk a little bit about that. So just in terms of my history, I have no idea when I became a compulsive overeater. I may have been born that way. Certainly my earliest memories are of food. I think that, you know, problematic binging started around middle school. I started using food to cope with uncomfortable emotions, and going to that as my solution, when I couldn't figure out how to live life on life's terms. And that became kind of a default as I moved through life after that. High school was definitely a lot of binging. I did try to stop at that point, but not very hard and not effectively at that time at all. By, you know, when I went off to university, I thought that a geographic cure would fix things, that if I moved away to university, I was no longer in my parents' house, which I really associated with a lot of that binging. You know, I would be able to stop, and I did for a short period of time, right up until the moment where I lost about 10 pounds, and it's like, oh, I've got this now. I know how to do this. And of course, from that moment on, it was like, well, if I've got this, then I can have a little bit of X. And the minute I had a little bit of X, I was spiraling downhill. And so my disease is not about my weight, but my disease manifested in my weight early on. And so my highest recorded weight was about 70 pounds higher than I am right now at a healthy body weight. And I probably got a little heavier than that. I don't know, but that was, I stopped looking at the scale after that because I didn't like that number. After that, I threw myself into a conventional diet program, where I learned how to restrict, but I was never, and I lost weight. I lost the 70 pounds. I was about the same, just a few pounds heavier than I am right now. So about a healthy body weight. But that didn't mean I was healthy, especially, and I was especially not free from this disease in any way, shape, or form. So having a healthy body did not mean that I was healthy. I was still I was restricting through the week, like problematically restricting and over exercising, and then binging at the end of the week, the night before all my points reset the next morning. And even when I was restricting calorie intake, but I was still binging on carrot sticks and sugar-free gum and diet soda. So I was never free of the compulsion to continue to put things in my mouth as an escape. And so, I lost that weight originally. And again, it was, I got within 3 pounds of my goal weight, and I've got this. I know how this works. I can do this on my own. And I never actually saw my goal weight. I immediately sprang back up, spent the next 10 years gaining and losing the same 20 to 30 pounds over and over and over again, with just this constant cycle of trying to control, losing that ability to control, and then springing back up. So I came into the rooms of OA when I hit that moment of realizing, like, there is no escape. I'm either fighting and fighting and fighting to control this disease and control these compulsions, or I'm giving in to them, and that feels completely unmanageable. I can't, it doesn't feel like relief. It doesn't feel like freedom. It's either way, I'm being controlled by the compulsions. And it was so freeing to realize one day, and I don't know how this thought occurred to me, but as I was journaling, I wrote out, I don't have control over this. And that word control triggered my memory that somebody had told me, that I read a book that talked about 12-step food fellowships. And so I knew that 12-step programs existed for food. And I had, at the time that I found out about that, considered it for a very brief moment, maybe the length of one Google search, then decided, no, I can do this on my own, which, I couldn't. And so, but I had trust in 12-step programs. So in that moment of being truly desperate, I found OA. I started reading the literature. I started attending the meetings, started finding out a little bit more about what this was, and I surrendered to whatever OA was going to tell me to do. I like, I don't know anything. I don't have a higher power. I came in as an atheist. I have no clue, but I know that I can't control these compulsions on my own. I can't get rid of them on my own. I'm willing to do whatever this program suggests. I'm not going to say that it was an overnight thing. It definitely took me a couple of months, and I went back and forth on the question of whether I could still do this on my own, but I at least hung on to that desperation enough to be still convinced that I needed a sponsor. And so I kept looking for a sponsor. It took me a little while to find strong meetings where there were sponsors available. Luckily, this was one of the ones that I found, this meeting, and then another one on Monday nights. And I found a sponsor who immediately asked me to do a bunch of things that I had no idea how I would have time to do. She asked me to commit my food every day, to attend meetings, to meet with her regularly, to listen to recordings of a really strong Big Book phone meeting every day, to make outreach calls, to build up my network, and to work the steps. And I was looking at that like, I cannot do that. I have no time. I'm a parent. I'm a full-time employee. I have, community service commitments outside of work. There is no way that I can fit in additional things. But I still had that desperation, that knowing that on my own, I cannot do this. And the belief that that OA had an answer that I didn't have. And I could see in this sponsor the type of recovery that I wanted to have. And so I agreed to do that work, even though I had no idea how I was going to fit it into my life. I said yes, and then I immersed myself in the program. And that's one of the pieces of advice that I give to any newcomer coming into the program. Like, I didn't know when I came in what I needed. I w left to my own devices. I had a temporary sponsor for a little bit during that 2 month period, and she had suggested, maybe you could commit your food. And I said, no, I don't need to do that. It was when I had a sponsor that said, in order to work with me, you do this, that I realized that that was an important thing for me to do, and that decision to do the thing I was being asked to do, even though I didn't see the necessity, was super, super important. It was a big part of surrender. And that doesn't mean that I do absolutely everything. I do a lot of the same things that my sponsor asked me to do from the beginning. I still do most of those today. But some of them look a little bit different. Some of them, I don't necessarily make 3 outreach calls every day. But I try to make outreach a major part of my life and my program, and I love doing it. Is it 3 every day? No. But I've kind of learned from that. If I had said at the beginning, I'm not, like, outreach isn't for me, I'm not going to do any of it, then I would never have known how amazing it is to have an outreach call. Like, somebody called me yesterday just out of the blue, and I had a great call at a time that I wouldn't have planned it. I wouldn't have scheduled it at that particular time, but it was great to talk to a newcomer about some of the core elements of the program, and so some of the best parts of my week are when I'm doing outreach, or when I'm listening to meetings or going on meetings that I wouldn't have otherwise done. And so that's one of the big things that I recommend, is just, like, I didn't know what was going to be important. So I found somebody who was recovered and asked them what they did, and just started doing that. And I could work out the details of what balance looked like in my life later, after I had worked the steps, because that was the big thing. It's not just about working the tools every day, but it was about getting into the big book and working all of the steps as they're laid out in the big book as quickly as possible. And as quickly as possible means something different for everybody. I've met people who can work the steps beginning to end in 2 weeks. For me, it took more like 10. I've worked with sponsees where it's taken more like 6 months. And the important thing is, are we getting the benefit of recovery? So I know that my time is running out. I do want to just highlight the fact that doing this work, I came in because of the food, not necessarily because of my weight, but because of the unmanageability of these compulsions. And I have gotten freedom from those compulsions in following this program by establishing my abstinence, being very clear about what my abstinence is, and then working the steps on a daily basis. But what I also found was that food and the compulsions around food were really just the beginning of what I could find freedom from. I realized that the very basis of my desire to go to food in the first place, my use of food as a solution, was based in the fact that I couldn't live life on life's terms. I didn't know how to live life on life's terms. And so this program has really helped me to sit with that uncomfortability of life and sit with it and deal with that, and given me the tools to work through a lot of the hard things in life, so that I can come out on the other side. And it's never perfect. It's always a work in progress, but I've seen so much freedom in my life from things like my anxiety and a lot of, yeah, just a lot of other elements that were taking over my life that I had no idea were related to food. So, I think with that, I will pass and